Muddy Knees Media.
Totally Football Show Summer Special. Today, Revenge of the Sixth. Sevilla win the Europa League once again against the heavy favourites Inter as Conte again fails to win on the continent. Will he have to pay? Or as Eva Benega said, does he already have one? We'll have our thoughts on the game in Cologne, plus we'll get some transfer news and superstar teams and Rafa's dreams. We'll have a look at the Champions League final on Sunday. It's the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Sevilla, 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 aquí estamos contigo, Sevilla, compartiendo la gloria en tu escudo, orgullo del fútbol de nuestra ciudad.
Hello, listener. It is Saturday morning, 22nd of August, and you can bet that the Sevilla anthem is still ringing out around the streets and calles of that fine, fine city. We're joined here on the Totally Football Show Summer Special by Julien Aron.
Hello, James. Hi, everyone.
And James Horncastle.
Hello.
James, you're watching TV at the same time, multitasking.
Well, yeah, I want to see what Conte does, whether he's going to blow up or not.
Yeah. We've also got Raphael Honigstein, who we awoke from his nap in a hotel in Cologne. A little bit later on, he'll be on to tell us about Sunday's final. Alvaro Romeo as well will be going big on Seville and the causes of Sevilla later on. Europa League final, the game 421 days in the making. Let's get this going.
If you're not yet a subscriber to The Athletic, take out a 30-day trial to see their unrivaled coverage of each and every Premier League club by heading to theathletic.com/totally.
Ahí está la pelota, punto de penalti, tocan, está vivo, va a intentar el remate.
Madre mía.
Gol, gol, Diego Carlos. Diego Carlos. Gol, 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 gol.
All right then, Friday night, 3-2 win for Sevilla. That's the sixth time they've won this competition, 15th time that a Spanish side has faced a non-Spanish side in a final since 2001. They've won all 15 of those. And emotional scenes at the end there, Julen Lopetegui in tears and Monchi being bounced up and down by the Sevilla players. Inter were the big favourites here. Jules, what happened?
Well, to start with, I think it was a fantastic final with not just the goals, but I think loads of things happening, loads of things for us to discuss. I was disappointed by Inter Milan, I have to be honest, by Lukaku, by Lautaro Martinez, by Conte's approach to the game and Conte's management during the game, his coaching. I thought it took too long to bring on players, especially Arthur Alexis Sanchez. And for me, Conte has a big responsibility in this defeat. And again, it's another European competition that denies him in a way. But I thought this Sevilla team, I mean, it's just a wonderful team. Eva Banega is a wonderful player, as we've been saying so much. And especially when he takes the make of Antonio Conte for his hair transplant, it's even better. But I think overall, Sevilla probably deserve to win. I think they've been the best team in this competition, even if against United in the semi-finals, at times they struggled a little bit with the intensity. I still think overall they were a fantastic team to watch in this competition.
Okay. Well, let's have a quick check back on how the game unfolded. First off, who had 2 minutes for the Diego Carlos penalty sweepstake?
What a hat trick he's got. Does. Quarterfinal, semi-final, final. Really, I mean, there can't be any
impressive
player who's done that before, surely. It's David Luiz. I mean, David Luiz must be at home thinking, how have I not done this?
But, you know. Yet. Yeah.
Yet.
So that was Romelu Lukaku bursting upfield after a lovely ball from Barella. And Carlos brings him down, and there was the big question about whether he should have been sent off. And maybe, as has been pointed out, if it hadn't been about 2 minutes into the game, he would have gone. Or maybe the referee felt that the other two players might have covered the goal-scoring opportunity. Inter's lead didn't last long. Luke de Jong equalising with a bullet header from the first of a couple of really outstanding headers, both from set pieces. And here comes the big what happened to Inter's defending question.
Well, I mean, Inter have only conceded two-headed goals in Serie A all season, one in 2020. And I think that was one of the selection choices that was most surprising from kickoff, that Luke de Jong got the go-ahead instead of Enseri. Yes, he scored in the semi-final against Manchester United off the bench, but it seems that Lopetegui, particularly how well Sevilla did from dead ball situations, you know, Benega's delivery, exceptional, more or less all night. It wasn't just De Jong, you know, putting them in front as well as getting them level, but putting them in front with that header from the set piece, which was schoolboy defending from Inter, just the way that De Jong was able to run around the back, and there was just so passive into particularly Gagliardini. And I think there were some other players, you know, that could have scored headed goals. Ocampos, what, just before the interval as well. Having said that, you know, aside from the set pieces, what other saves did Handanovic have to make? Yeah, he didn't. So for me, Sevilla deserved to win into a very flat second half. I agree with Jules that I think Conte waited too long to make his changes. I also thought his body language on the sidelines in the second half, it wasn't what I was expecting after all the fire that you saw from him in, what, the first 15 minutes.
You just heard him speaking now to Italian TV. What did he have to say?
Well, he was saying that he's been on a wonderful journey with Inter, that he's very thankful for the opportunity that was given to him. That there, he's going to take a couple of days and then meet the club. But you know, he's got to decide whether, you know, what's his priority right now. Is it his family or is it football? Because this year has been tough, and he's certainly given the impression that you know, working for Inter has had an impact. And you would, from what he said, you'd say it's been a negative impact on his family, yeah, be it from the goldfish bowl that you live in as an Inter manager, be it for all the kind of stress and strain that comes with it. Yeah, he seems to have shifted the focus there instead of on, for example, you need to buy me this player, that player. So, I mean, it's been put to him as a kind of follow-up question. It's like, this sounds like goodbye, Antonio. He's like, you don't know that. You don't know that. But then again, you know everything, don't you? You know everything, which is when he gradually starts to unravel as these interviews enter, what, the 9th or 10th minute.
So, James, making those kind of comments at this point, it does rather suggest that he's preparing to walk away if they're not preparing to push him. So what do you think we're going to be seeing in a week or two's time?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if Inter and Conte come to a resolution, because it's too expensive for Inter to sack Antonio Conte, because he's still got 2 years on a deal that makes him the best paid manager in the league. And this again goes into that story about Lionel Messi in terms of can Inter afford him. Well, if they can't afford to sack Antonio Conte, then they certainly can't afford Lionel Messi. So I think they'd have to come to some sort of a resolution. Everything that Conte said tonight, a lot of it would indicate that, yeah, he is prepared to leave some money on the table and resign if they don't agree on a way forward. And in that case, don't be surprised if it's Massimiliano Allegri who replaces him, as he did at Juventus when Conte resigned there as well. And he was chosen by Juventus' chief executive at the time, Beppe Marotta, who is now Inter's chief executive. It would be a very straightforward and easy replacement job, I think, at this late juncture. Max has shown, as he did, what, in 2014, that, you know, he can come in just on the eve of pre-season, or even when pre-season started, and establish himself at a big club. So, you know, at the moment, it does look like Inter will be looking for a new manager rather than retaining Conte. I think there's still a slight chance that he would stay, but, you know, given his mood and his demeanour and everything he said tonight, it seems like thanks for the opportunity, but maybe we should just, maybe it's best if we walk away.
Jules was asking one or two questions about his substitutions. One thing that I think was especially disappointing after the semi-final performance was the kind of total absence of Lautaro Martinez and any kind of link-up between him and Lukaku in the game. Was that Sevilla's excellent defending? Was it an off night? What happened to those two?
I think the front two got very little service all night. And I think, they can't create things themselves. They have done it occasionally this season, but they need help from the midfield. And I thought the midfield was kind of totally absent, particularly once Barella got booked at the end of the first half. Too often, Sevilla were able to direct Inter's build-up play to Gagliardini. Gagliardini's not a passer. He's not a playmaker. And also, I thought the wing-backs that Inter have were almost too preoccupied by the thought of what Reguilón and Jesus Navas, particularly Navas in the first half, caused Ashley Young and that Inter left-hand side all kinds of problems. And so all the things that usually click for Inter, all the mechanisms that are kind of crucial to getting Lautaro and Lukaku into the game, they kind of stopped working, I would say, after, 40 minutes. And in the second half, they never got really started.
Sevilla, by contrast, looking far more composed. It was Godin who'd equalised, made it 2-2 for Inter. But then, and again, a set-piece, Jules, Diego Carlos with that bicycle kick, which then goes in off Lukaku.
Yes, that's right. For me, I know the goal was given to Diego Carlos, who was certainly the main protagonist of the game tonight. But it looked to me like the overhead kick was going off target, and that is Lukaku scores an own goal, which, again, considering he missed a chance just before that as well, and was quite quiet, to be fair. I don't know if we should be disappointed or not. He's had a wonderful season. He scored 34 goals, as many as Ronaldo in his first season at the club. He's done some really good stuff. I think he's improved. I think he's fitter, he's leaner. He certainly works better with another striker next to him instead of on his own up front like he was at Manchester United. But in the big games tonight, I really expected more from him. And maybe it's the end of a very, very long season, and he's played a lot because he was the main guy for them anyway. So didn't have much time to rotate or could not much rotate, or I don't know, but I'm a bit disappointed tonight, and I don't know if it's the two sides of Romelu Lukaku that we've seen, capable of great things, but also in some of the big games disappearing a bit and missing the key chance that certainly if he scores before Diego Carlos, the game is over and Inter win, and he misses that chance. So I don't know. I don't want to be too harsh with him because I still think he's improving and he's still young enough to continue improving and becoming really one of the best in the world. But I was with Roberto Martinez the other day, and he said on CBS, or Lukaku is a better striker than Lewandowski. And I was like, I think a lot of people looked and said, like, really? And I think tonight you have to be disappointed.
Wow. I'm sure Inter are. One man who's not, though, is Alvaro Romeo. Wow. Once again, Sevilla, the underdogs, once again, they bring it home. Remarkable stuff. Is there an easy answer if I say to you, what's their secret?
No, I think there is not. There is not, because there is a lot of good work done, especially when it comes to scouting. There is a harsh demand on managers and players by the fans that definitely makes Sevilla try to take it to the next level every season. Let's don't forget that Julen Lopetegui was under heavy questioning back in February after drawing against Cluj and almost getting knocked out from Europa League. And I think that there is a little bit of good luck when it comes to the big moments. All that together makes Sevilla a very competitive team in the Europa League. And they have won 6 Europa Leagues in this century, which is astonishing, really. And they seem to have a know-how as well to win the finals. Today they didn't get nervous despite having to face a terrific opposition, at least at times. I mean, the goal of Romelu Lukaku after 5 minutes would have knocked out many football teams because, Inter seemed to be strong. They were perhaps slightly favourites on paper, considering that they have done very well at times in Serie A this season, and at some point they were challenging for the Serie A title with Juventus. But Sevilla has the composure, and in the second half, I think in the first half they were very good, very good. And De Jong was a surprising addition to this Sevilla story, with 2 goals in the final, with another goal in the semi-final. And then in the second half, they played with the composure of a very big team, a team with a new manager, and they still managed to win a title. It's really remarkable.
It absolutely is. It's not a big club. They don't have success in other areas, really, do they, of their season? It's just the Europa League all the time.
Yeah, well, I think that they have been very good in the league, but they've never been good enough to challenge for the league title. I mean, they finished third in 2006-2007, but still far away from Real Madrid, who was eventually the league winner. I would say that they know what they are doing, really. I mean, how many football players go to Sevilla and they find an environment to bring their best football back? I mean, I'm thinking about so many, like, for example, Samir Nasri, and Jules knows about it. I mean, the first 6 months he did in Sevilla were astonishing, and it has happened with so many players. It brings back the best of footballers that seem to be gone for football. I don't know, Fernando could be one of them, for example.
Alvaro, will they be able to build on this, on the good finish in the league this year and now this cup, and not have to lose so many players this time around? Is there any chance that Eva Banega will decide to stay on?
No, Banega is leaving, unfortunately. And I think that his decision is 100% sure he will be leaving to Saudi Arabia. And it's a real shame because he, in my opinion, he's the most technically gifted midfielder that the Europa League had. And Sevilla benefited a lot from Banega's performance. And I don't think that Sevilla will lose many players this summer, because this summer is going to be a little different. There is less cash around, and some of the good Sevilla players, they've got still contracts until 2023, 2024. So maybe this summer it's a bit more unlikely that Sevilla loses players. And I think that this project still has some more steps to do. Hopefully next season in the Champions League, Sevilla can pass the threshold of the quarterfinals. They've never done it. The Atletico managed to be third, and I think that Sevilla genuinely can be third next season if they build up on what they have.
Alvaro Romeo. The fact that Sevilla have been in the final so many times, I wonder if that played a part in how well they were able to govern the game. But we should as well salute Luke de Jong. I know James was saying poor defending the way he was able to run around the back, but that second header was a bit extraordinary.
It was fantastic. And I really didn't think he would score, especially against a keeper like Handanovic. But what a header. Fantastic. It's not everybody's cup of tea. And I understand that the guy's got no pace. I mean, even technically, he's not that gifted. If you compare it with Lautaro, for example, who's by far a better footballer. But when he gets the right service, like against United, and again, like against tonight, and he doesn't take much for Jesus Navas good cross or Reguilón good cross or Banega set piece, but he's always in the right position. His movement in the box is perfect. His timing is perfect. And even if he's held by some poor defending, I mean, the first goal, I'm sorry, but you've had your video analysis session and you saw the game against Manchester United. It's almost the same goal. It's almost the same goal that he scored against United, that he scored again tonight. I don't know how you cannot defend, how you cannot be prepared for that, but you can't take anything away from De Jong and a performance like this when he's been in and out of the team all season because he's not a prolific goal scorer. And often for the movement and for the mobility, El Nesyri was preferred to him by Lopetegui. And I think rightly so, like we saw in the semi-final. But what an impact he can have when the service is right is fantastic.
Mm. Just on the subject of the scale of Sevilla compared to some of the bigger clubs and indeed Inter, who they were playing this evening. Inter earn €200 million more in revenue than Sevilla per season. This is by Swiss Ramble's calculations. They have a wage bill that's 85% higher than the Spanish side.
But you know, it would be easy to say, for example, oh, let's go and get Monchi at your club, and it will do a difference. And
then Roma tried that.
To Roma.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's funny
how they're still trying to repair the damage.
Yeah. So I don't know if it was. I don't think it would have been only Monchi's fault. I guess maybe James Palota, maybe the way the club was working. I don't know. There could be a lot of reason why. But it's quite fascinating to see how the guy could be such a genius when he's in Andalusia. And then as soon as he leaves Andalusia, he becomes an absolute clown. And I just don't know. It's quite incredible.
James, any final thoughts on the game, despite the eruptions that are happening in Inter? Did you enjoy it?
The first half was one of the best finals that I've seen in a long, long time. Just because it felt like a kind of cliched Copa Libertadores game, in that it felt like it could go off at any moment, particularly the first 15 minutes. I thought the referee let a few things go. You know, Jules mentioned that he didn't send off Diego Carlos after 5 minutes, but I think that needle and the goals flying in just made it kind of so exciting. I think it's going to be it's going to be difficult for the Champions League final maybe to live up to that. So we'll have to see. Although now that I've said that, it's going to be Paris 5, Bayern Munich 3. Isn't it, Jules?
I hope so, James. I would love you forever if that was the final score, that's for sure. I just want, just to finish on, I think we need to give more love to Eva Banega and the incident with Antonio Conte on the touchline, because I think in a European Cup final, for a player to go to the opposition manager and to like, yeah, take the mic out of his hair transplant and his wig, or I mean, whatever exactly Eva Banega wants to say. And then for the manager to respond and to say, I'll wait for you outside after the... I mean, this is just stuff that you could not make up. And I think we need to show that a bit of love.
Did he talk about that on Italian TV at all, James?
No, because he's still yet to go outside and confront Banega, as he said. That was something that actually Sky Italia confirmed, because they actually used their sideline reporters to basically earwig on what the coaches are saying. And that's where the "I'll see you outside, Banega" came from, which is just brilliant.
Who would win in a fight between Banega and Conte?
Yeah, I think
Banega is the type to have his mate around the corner, and if he's in trouble, you know, if he starts the fight and then see that, then they come over and they just smash Conte, the four or five of them.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what the parameters of this contest are.
Conte, I think, is in better shape than Eva Banega.
yeah,
he's ripped.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, we are all in better shape than Eva Banega, to be fair.
I'm not. Anyway, well, will Sunday's final live up to the drama that we saw in Cologne? We'll be discussing that very, very shortly. First of all, though, other bits of news after this.
Everyone remembers that time you've had that peach of an accumulator looking good only for, oh, and the keeper's let it slip through his legs in the 94th minute. Or the right back has to pull on the gloves and face a penalty. Or Man United have again conceded a late equaliser. But with Paddy Power's Acca Cracker, you get a free bet if one leg of your fourfold plus Acca lets you down on all football matches and all markets. Paddy Power. Max free bet £10. Minimum odds of 1 to 5 on each leg. Online exclusive. Exclude shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
This is the Totally Summer Special by the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Big news in Italy. James Horncastle, La Spezia, have given Liguria a third team in the top flight. These the crazy scenes as down the road from Portofino, the fans celebrated their arrival in Serie A. How exciting is it going to be having three derbies now?
Well, a friend of mine who supports Genoa says that, yeah, in Spezia they're proud of not being in Liguria. And
are they not
being in Tuscany? Well, they are, kind of technically. They're Ligurian, but they kind of treat themselves as something apart. Mm. And they've taken, Genoa fans have taken no small kind of delight out of the fact that Spezia will probably have to play their games not in Liguria or Tuscany, but in Cesena. ground won't probably get a license to play in Serie A because it's too small, and they can't play at Marassi where Genoa and Sampdoria play, because every other weekend one or Genoa and Samp is playing. So yeah, they'll probably have to play 300 kilometers across the
but there's
coast.
Nowhere else available. That's extraordinary.
But I mean, it's a great story insofar as they've never played in Serie A before, although they have won a Scudetto. But was it this Spezia or was it the Vigili di Fuoco?
Yeah, it's the Farmans.
It's the firemen.
The Farmans League.
Exactly. So they won it in 1944. They've got this manager, James, Vincenzo Italiano, who was born in Karlsruhe in Germany. It's like a reverse Domenico Tedesco. And he has he's won three promotions in 3 years with three different clubs back to back. And you know, he might not be sticking around at Spezia because he wants to get involved in the churn that is Genoa.
Well, he might be spat out the other end very soon. Best of luck to him and to La Spezia, and it's gonna be interesting to see how they get on from Cesena. Meantime, Jules, the French season has got underway. with a goalless draw.
Yeah, two shots on target. Hooray!
Bordeaux-Nantes. Any further word on COVID and all that sort of disruption for Marseille and other teams?
Yes, unfortunately, more positive cases emerged today. I think we're up to 8 clubs now with at least one player. Monaco, Nice today on top of Montpellier, for example, Marseille, who have 5 players. And the protocol in France, which is quite strict, stricter than the ones in the, that happened in Premier League when they restarted the league, for example, says that if you've got more than 3 players, then your game has to be postponed, which I think a lot of managers and a lot of clubs in France are not in agreement with. They think that if you've got 3 positive players, then they can go in self-isolation. You test the other ones. It's like if you had 3 injured players, you can still play. You have enough players in your squad to play. It's not like if you were without 15 players and that you should not postpone the game, but still play it with a weakened side, but still play it and get on with it, really. So it's quite tense, to be honest. At the start, there's some people who are very pessimistic and that they don't think... they think there will be more issues and more problems, more games postponed in already what is a very tight schedule, so that could cause chaos. So we'll have to see, but it's certainly not the restart or the start that they wanted.
All right. They're not going to call this season off as well, are they?
I don't think so. I don't think it will be that bad. But imagine if there's, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 games postponed in the next 3 weekends, for example. This will have really bad consequences because, again, it's such a tight season, you don't have many free days or windows to play those postponed matches. So it could be really crazy.
5 positive tests for Atletico Madrid's players in the Women's Champions League. They hadn't been able to train as a result. They were all confined to their rooms prior to their quarterfinal against Barcelona on Friday, which they lost 1-0. The other game on Friday saw Wolfsburg taking on Glasgow City and beating them 9-1. They'll be taking on Barcelona in the semi-finals. More to come on Saturday as Arsenal take on PSG and Lyon take on Bayern. Lyon, the massive favourites, as per usual. In other news, what's this we read about Thiago Silva joining Chelsea, Jules?
Yeah, Chelsea are one of the clubs who are really keen on Thiago Silva, who've made contact. I was told that he was not that advanced in the talks. I think they're far more advanced at Fiorentina, for example, where he's already agreed pretty much personal terms. And I think he really likes the idea of going back to Italy more maybe than going to England. That doesn't mean he's not going to sign for Chelsea. I just think that they're a bit behind. I think there's still hope in Thiago Silva's head that maybe his very good performances in the Champions League could sort of make PSG giving him a new deal now, which they didn't do a few months ago. But that could change maybe in Leonardo. So this one is to follow as well. I just think he's 35. So of course, he's not getting any younger. He still has a lot to offer. He's such a good guy, such a good professional as well, that whoever signs him, I think would be quite lucky, because I still think that he have enough in him to have another 2 very good seasons.
Okay. But you think Fiorentina are ahead?
Yeah, that's what I was told. I was told that they were ahead in the sense that they've already agreed personal terms with him. He would come on a free. So then I think it would be just down to him to decide what kind of project he wants to take on, where he wants to go, which country. And I still believe that if PSG were to offer him a 1+1 year deal, for example, I think he would love to stay in Paris.
Well, maybe if he does a job on Sunday. Who knows, eh? Also, I'm seeing reports from Julien Laurens that discussions have begun between Arsenal and Lyon for the transfer of Houssem Aouar. That would be exciting for Arsenal.
That would be. It's a hard deal to make because he's expensive now, especially after how well he's played in the Champions League, and Lyon won between 50 and 60 million euros. And I don't think Arsenal don't have that kind of money right now, I think, for at least for that position. So they would try to look for another way of maybe signing him. The problem is Juventus are very keen as well. And I think Andrea Pirlo, in the overhaul of his squads and the rebuild of his midfield especially, really likes the idea of having Houssem Aouar there. I think Manchester City and Pep Guardiola, who's been a fan.
Jules, will they take Bernardeschi in exchange? Will they take Gonzalo Higuain in exchange? Because there's no way Juventus have 50 million euros swimming around to pay for Houssem Aouar. The only way they'd be able to do that deal is basically package up a load of guys and basically say, here, take him, please take him. And it's cash neutral, this deal. Brilliant, fantastic, okay, brilliant, we can do it.
I think that could, you know, that could potentially interest Lyon, again, depending on what players. But I think the issue might more be for the players themselves to go from Juventus to Lyon. I'm not sure a Douglas Costa, for example, for the sake of him, wanting to go to Lyon after spending...
Yeah, Turin and Lyon aren't that... I mean, it's just, you know, across the Alps on the old train, isn't it? I mean, they're
Champions
trying to get
League semi-finalists.
Take the tunnel. You take the tunnel and you're there.
Yeah. Mm.
All right. Well, more on that when we know more. And next up on this show, let's have a look at the Champions League final.
You're listening to the Totally Summer Special by the Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
So, 11th of June 2019, it began. Feronichelli against Lincoln Red Imp. Now, 79 teams from 54 countries later, we're down to just two, Paris Saint-Germain and Bayern Munich, in the last and most important game of this men's football season. Woo! Jules, how's the mood in France?
It's very positive. I think the players are quite positive as well. I think they see this game as a really 50-50 game that they have a chance to win it. Certainly in France, it's the same. It's not like, I would say the usual, but it's not the usual. But often when we've reached a Champions League final, there was always a sense that it was the step too high. Even Monaco against Porto and Mourinho, I think Monaco thought, there was always, it's very French to already start a game like this, certainly at club level, where you already think that it's going to be hard to win this one. But I don't think that's the case for Sunday. And we saw how much he meant to the players to have qualified. And he certainly meant more for them than for Bayern Munich when you see both reactions. But I think they believe very much that they can do it. And they believe it's their year. And it's written somewhere that on their 50th anniversary year that they can finally get there. But they also know it will be a really, really tough game that, a bit like we saw tonight, will be won or lost on small margin.
All right. Well, meanwhile, as I mentioned, Raphael Honigstein is currently in Germany, in Cologne, and we disturbed him a little bit earlier on today to ask him how the mood was in Germany.
Well, I think Bayern are seen as favourites to win the competition, but there is also a lot of talk about all the things that we have mentioned, James, when we last spoke, which is the inherent risk in Bayern's setup. Will they change? If yes, how much will they change? If no, how beneficial will it be for PSG if Bayern don't change? I think that is the interesting, debate, combined with the fact, I think, that some people, I think, still seem to believe that because Bayern have been getting the results and, you know, haven't really been challenged by anyone, it'll just be obvious that they can go on to win this, but I think that they themselves and in Munich itself, within the team, they are much more aware of the danger that PSG will cause than perhaps in the wider public.
Mm. Looking back over Hansi Flick's season with Bayern, have there been other occasions where he's taken a less bold approach?
Not really. I think Bayern have played every single game the same way. Dortmund pushed them back quite a lot. They didn't get much of the ball against them in the opening spells. They had problems in counter-attack against Gladbach and Leverkusen back in December, the two games that they lost, and of course the Leipzig game that they couldn't win, the only game that they haven't won in 2020. But I think it'd be difficult to say that he has in some way really changed or modified the system in bigger games. It's been mostly one-way traffic. And again, the question is, how will Bayern react, not just if they come under pressure, but also perhaps if they go behind? Because this is, again, something that the club or the team has almost no experience in because they've been so dominant. Can they, you know, cope with someone actually standing up and giving them a really hard time? We just haven't seen it from the Bayern team because it wasn't necessary in recent months.
Just 22 minutes in the whole of this year so far they've been behind in. It's been an extraordinary campaign, record-breaking in the sense that they've won every single Champions League match that they've played, even before Hansi Flick took over. How upsetting would it be if the one game they lost was this one?
It'd be very upsetting, of course. It always depends how you lose. If it's, you know, upsetting to the point of being traumatic, or you just happen to have a team that's better than you, as was the case against Inter in 2010 in the final, where they were just outplayed by him. But of course, all those lovely results, that run, those records, I don't want to say count for nothing, but will ultimately just be a footnote if they don't go on to win this. So there is real pressure, as there always is at a club like Bayern, to see this through and not to just be satisfied and happy with how far they've come.
And not just for Bayern. Have you considered the fact that you'll never be able to mock PSG again or Ligue 1, never probably be able to be in a room with Jules again if Bayern lose to PSG?
Well, I trust Jules, if you were to win in good grace and be not triumphant at all and respect the feelings of the losing side as he often does, don't bring it up too often. Just like his reaction after France's World Cup, which he hardly ever mentioned, really, when they won it. So, fingers crossed.
I imagine he'll mention the defeat as infrequently as you do of PSG's many misadventures on the European stage. Rafa, one last thing then. Knowing what you know about PSG, if Hansi Flick sprained his ankle on the way to the stadium and they had called on you to manage Bayern for the game, it's a scenario we've both dreamt of, what would you do? How would you set them up against the Parisians?
I think those dreams usually involve being on the pitch suddenly, that Bayern have no players and they need to play me.
Right. Where would you play?
I don't know. I play anywhere Hansi Flick would want me to, obviously.
But it's your dream, Rafa.
Yeah, I don't know. It's yet to happen. But if you were just to ask me for advice, I'd say, look, you probably can't change too much, but just maybe pick your moments a bit. Don't go and push all the way. Try to be a little bit more focused and more choosy in those moments where you push and press all the way. Just otherwise, I think it'll be just too dangerous. And I'm sure that he doesn't need me to know that. I think that within the team, there are enough players to think the same way, and that we'll see a more balanced Bayern Munich side on the whole, I think, on Sunday night.
Okay, excellent. Rafa, enjoy the game this evening.
Thank you, James.
Rafa Honigstein in Germany. It certainly shapes up like an interesting game, this one. Two attacking teams, loads of big stars who could score loads of goals. Neymar, of course, with 19 goals and Mbappe with 23 this season. But here's a stat. Robert Lewandowski has scored more than the two of them put together. Wow, Jules.
Yeah, it's quite scary. I mean, if you look at the numbers that Bayern Munich have put in the Champions League this season, Gnabry and Lewandowski have scored 24 between the two of them, which is one more than the whole PSG team through the whole campaign. So it's pretty remarkable and incredible. I think they have the best squad in Europe this season. I think these are the two best teams that we've seen in the Champions League this season as well. I don't think there's any other team from what we've seen them play and the performance that have been better than those two. So it should be a great final, really. And again, we can discuss the high line and how they will play and if Icardi comes back for PSG or if you keep your 4-3-3 formation and the weaknesses and the strength of both sides. And I just think they both have qualities and they both have flaws. But again, he would be played on either a moment of pure magic or, as we said, thin margin, a little mistake there, a set piece somewhere there. It'd be very interesting.
Or could one team rush into a 3-0 lead and then lose 4-3? Is that...
Shut up. I know what you're saying now. You're trolling me already before... Well, you're not even there.
Jules, you know, I don't know why people aren't talking about Angel Di Maria more, you know, as being the straw that stirs the drink at PSG. You know, he's the olive in the martini right now. I mean, he's... I thought when he came back into the team in the semi-final, PSG kind of clicked anyway against Atalanta and should have won that game by 3 or 4 goals. For me, Di Maria just balances this side. I don't think... I've gone from being very confident about Bayern to just thinking, oh, a better team with the arsenal of weapons that PSG have got. Against that back line. They haven't come up against it yet.
Juan Bernat, who scored in the semi-final, of course, played for Bayern Munich, publicly blamed for an earlier Champions League exit by Uli Hoeneß in no uncertain terms.
Dass du den Juan Bernat so verherrlichst. Das Wohl und Wehe des FC Bayern hängt davon ab, dass wir Juan Bernat nach Paris.
It's really rare that you would find a club director calling out one of his own players in such brutal fashion. I imagine he's going to be a little bit fired up for this game, is he?
Completely, and rightly so as well, because he's a very, very nice guy, and the way he was targeted by Hoeneß was really strange. And the good thing about this final, apart from the fact that they're two great teams, as we explained, blah, 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 but it's also all the narratives, because you're right, Bernat playing against his former club with that sort of mentality of almost wanting revenge kind of thing. Kingsley Coman playing against his former club, against his former teammate in Presnel Kimpembe, who they've been playing with each other at PSG since they were the age of 11, all the way until they were 19, then before Coman left to go to Juventus. So everywhere you've got stories of players who've played with each other or played against each other, played in the club before. And I just think, you know, for Kerrer as well and Draxler, I guess, and Thomas Tuchel, of course, to play against the German side, and see Flick for his first Champions League final. I think it's only the fourth time in history that the two managers in the final are both the same nationality. So I think that's also very special. So I think there's so many narratives in that final that it makes it even more special.
Jules, they've been to 10 finals by Munich. They've won 5 of them. PSG have been to none and won none. How big an advantage is that for the Germans?
I think it is. You know, I think this is, and it's very much the German mentality as well. And I don't want to go too much onto the reaction after the two semi-finals. One were overly celebrating. The other one was just like, this is what we do.
We haven't won anything yet.
We're fine for finals anyway. Yeah. But I think that's really the mentality of those German players. They're very clinical, very efficient. There's not many emotions. And Thomas Tuchel as a manager is very much like that as well. PSG is very different. You've got loads of Brazilians who have a lot of emotions, who express a lot more than maybe some of the Bayern Munich players. So I think the experience will maybe play a part. At PSG, you only have Di Maria and Neymar who've won it before in 14 and 15. So that's already a long time ago. I guess Kylian Mbappé winning the World Cup, for example, that kind of experience will be beneficial for him. Kimpembe as well, but Navas also won the Champions League.
You've just named a lot of players
who've got winning
experience at the very highest level.
Maybe not.
No, but I think it's good to debunk it because, you know, I mean, as a club, you know, without that kind of Champions League winning DNA, I suppose. But you're right, Jules. When you list that group of players, they have assembled guys who've won everything. You know, for the most part. And, you know, the Brazilians, they are emotional, but they play for probably one of the most high-pressure national teams that you could ever think of playing for as well. So, you know, I think it's one of the, if anything with PSG, it's one of those kind of weird intangibles about what is it about PSG that has up until now stopped them making good on their potential in this competition. And the thing is, we're actually seeing them make good on their potential in this competition this season. Is that because, from what I can tell, everyone seems to get on really well. They love going out with each other to Marco Verratti's restaurant in Paris. They hang out together. They don't seem to have any beef with anyone. I like the vibe this PSG team have got at the moment. They just seem to have... It seems to all knit together quite... Apparently, Keylor Navas, for example, has been a sort of his influence. Apparently he's been a quite stabilizing guy to have around. I think that also just, it's not just character, it's that the fact that he's a better goalkeeper than Kevin Trapdoor was. I mean, so I think there's a lot of good things going for PSG.
It is far more of a team than it's ever been before. They have this pact about it that they made together in that restaurant, in that piece I wrote for ESPN, trying to explain it and during lockdown as well, which they didn't have that before. And just to finish on that very quickly, I think Kylian Mbappé summed it up so well after the Leipzig game. He said, Neymar and I realized at some point that we could not do this on our own. And unless you're Messi, even Cristiano could not do it on his own. You know, without Benzema, I'm not sure he would have won and scored as many goals as he did. So really, I think even the realization from Mbappé and Neymar to say, like, hang on, we need to be a group. We need to be united. I need the other ones around us to be good. Otherwise, we will never get there. And I think just that has made a massive difference.
Well, we'll see how much of a difference it's made on Sunday. We'll have a couple of other thoughts about the PSG-Bayern clash in a second or two, but first of all, here's Lee Price.
Hello. Champions League final. We've heard compelling cases made for both sides, but our traders aren't convinced. They're still heavily backing Bayern to win this. They're 10-11 to win the match and 1-2 to lift the trophy. That's pretty one-sided. PSG, on the other hand, are priced at 23-10 to win it in 90 minutes or 6-4 to win the Champions League, regardless of methods. Either way, it should have all the ingredients for a classic, and you can't reference cooking things without bringing in certain Serge Gnabry. The semi-final hero is 7-5 to score in the final for Bayern. A penny for Tony Pulis' thoughts. However, the most likely person on the pitch to score is his teammate, Robert Lewandowski, who is odds-on to notch, while Kylian Mbappe and Neymar are both priced at 13-10 to score any time. That's some attacking talent, isn't it? So I'll give you the obvious odds relating to that. 0-0 after 90 minutes is 22-1. That's a really long price, and I'm actually kind of tempted. No one else appears to be, and with good reason. It's 1-3 that both teams score here. As for me, I'm off for my summer break. Don't miss me too much. But I'll be back in approximately 4 hours for the new season pods. See you then.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop. Now, one thing we haven't touched on yet is Serge Gnabry's moustache, which I think a lot of people will have been struck by. His hair's grown out and he's wearing that tash. And it is an unusual bit of facial adornment for a footballer these days. But when a footballer wears a moustache and rocks it, it's one of the most effective things they can do, I would suggest. Your mind probably goes back to, of course, Liverpool teams of the 70s, but also the likes of Van Petta, a style icon. Yeah, Van Petta.
PSG player, former PSG player.
Well, absolutely.
Raymond Domenech as well, you know?
Raymond Domenech, yeah, I believe he used to. Do you know, it's funny because totallyfootballshow.com ran on Friday, and it's obviously still there, a very special and in no way borrowed from a question of sport test where you had to identify the players from their moustache. I got 7 out of 10. I was pretty happy with that, I've got to tell you.
I was like Pepe Bergamis when he was a teenager at the 1982 World Cup. And then there's that guy, Abe van der Baan, who, he must be a fictional character because his moustache, I'm going to drop this on WhatsApp to you because it's astounding.
Just while you're doing that, a lot of the Dutch of the 90s, your Hulits, your Frank Rijkaards, they rocked a moustache. But as I say, it's something you just don't see anymore, or at least not too much. And that's why it was so extra. Jeepers, creepers. This picture of Abe van der Baan has just come through. Where on earth did you find this fellow? He looks like he could take off with those things.
Tony Coibaffi. I put that in and that's what came out.
But wow. The best moustache had to be Adil Rami at the 2018 World Cup with France. Do you remember the one that like hipsters wear where he has like a little turn at the top? And you know the famous joke when after the game the Croatian Prime Minister comes down to the dressing rooms with Macron, with the French President Macron, to say well done to the French players, and she gets to Rami, and who didn't play a single second in the whole competition, but anyway, and she said, "Oh, I love your moustache," and Rami said, "Oh, thank you very much." And he looks at her and said, "I love Mykonos," thinking that Mykonos was in Croatia. I mean, this sums Adil Rami so well.
What happens in Mykonos goes to Syros, does it now? I don't know.
Well, you know what? We could talk about moustachio players all night, but I don't think producer Charlie would thank us for that. So let's wrap it up there. It's been a delight to hear from you today, Jules and James.
Lovely to be here, James.
Thank you, James.
We thank Raphael Honigstein and Alvaro Romeo as well for their participation. Listener, thank you for being along. And we'll be back not on Sunday morning, but on Monday morning with our review of the Champions League final. The last edition, it'll be, of this Totally Football Show summer special. So make sure you join us for that. And now, though, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of The Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and follow us at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of The Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on The Athletic app. The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
Muddy Knees Media.